let's take a picture now. I do not want to forget the way you look at me when everything is perfect. A perfect memory of when things are so good and everything is worked out just the way we knew it would. Yes.
Welcome everyone to Xena and Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 42. This podcast shows for all the Xena and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to the XNU show. Hope everyone is doing well. We've had another heck of a week and interesting to say the least. This weekend was a runaround weekend, you know. See, my father-in-law bought each family a plasma TV, a huge 50-inch, magnificent, wow, TV. And it's awesome. I got to say, I thank God for that, and I thanked him very much. We were planning on getting one of these at the end of, you know, the June, July, when most companies do their stock take, their inventory stock take, in the end of the year, since here, the end of the year finishes in June, and the new financial year starts in July. And they start clearance sales and all that then. And also when we would have a little bit of some of the new kitchen paid off so that we could, you know, manage things. Well, beggars can't be choosers, and we couldn't say no to such a gift, not only for what it was, as Julie really, really wanted one, but also as it was from Mom. Well before she passed away, she knew that she wouldn't be here for Christmas, and she asked Dad to go ahead and get something that we would really appreciate. So he went out and bought three huge plasma screen TVs for, you know, each family, and just, wow, you know, we couldn't really be any more grateful for it. But, so, you know, off we went in search of a new entertainment unit and get rid of the stereo cabinet and the old corner entertainment unit and the old TV and... Yeah. So we sold the old TV and we sold the stereo cabinet, and we have the corner entertainment unit stuck in the garage. And we found this really nice black glass entertainment center. So that wound up sitting for about 3 hours to put it together. Then it's, you know, move this, shift that, lift that, toss that, and then debate about this. And finally, when 10 p.m. came around, I was just like, that's it. I quit, honey. You're on your own. You want to do anything else, go for it. I'm going to bed. The next day was, well, honey, what do you think about this idea? Naturally, I volunteered to go cut the lawn. I was like, you do whatever you want, sweetheart. I'll be fine. I'm going to go out in the middle of the day and cut the lawn in the searing heat. Just, I'm not getting into it. But, you know, we had to arrange for the technician to come out and get this sucker up on the wall, because she wants it on the wall. She doesn't want it on the table in the entertainment center, because that's where the stereo cabinet goes and the speakers for the stereo cabinet. And then our cake display from our wedding cake and all that goes on top. So, man, talk about wires. Man, this place, my living room looks like somebody just dropped an atom bomb on it. It was just like, boom. Everything's everywhere. You got records over here, you got tapes over there, you got CDs and DVDs over here, you got the furniture's pulled into the center because there's just, you have to get to the speakers, and of course when you pull things out, you have to dust, don't you? And then, oh, we have to go and paint the wall where the chips are, and we have to, oh, for just for love of Pete, I only just now started to work on my honey-do list, and it's just like, yeah, sure, not a problem, just add it to the list of things to do, and yeah, I'll get to it eventually. It's only 2009 now, so I'll finish it by 2010 at the rate I'm going. But anyway, you know. And he had to crawl up underneath the house, and it took him 5 hours, and he still isn't finished, because we haven't even done all the wiring and stuff. It's just, he went underneath the house to do to hide some of the wires so we wouldn't have it dragging across the floor or on the back of things and stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's just really intense, and I just want my garage back. I can hardly fit my truck in there, and let alone do any work, so, you know. What's a girl to do when she can't play in our garage, eh? You know? So, gone. Hey. But anyway, regarding me and my running, well, I had to cut back a wee bit as my legs are starting to ache all the time, and a bit too severely for my liking. And I was also starting to get a small ache in my lower back, so I know that I was just going too fast, too quickly, and not giving my body time to acclimate to exercising again. So, yeah, it's 1 week off of running, but I'm walking in a very, very high, fast pace and biking, so they're still getting a workout, and it's just not jarring them, so I'll keep you updated as I go along with that. But needs to say that I did go and finally see my massage therapist and say, please, 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 beg you, please, I implore you, I'll do anything you want. Just please massage my legs. And of course, I barely walked out of there. I pretty much dragged myself back to my vehicle at that point. It was just like, oh my God, why did I put myself through? But the next day, I felt a lot better for it. So, you know, that's a good thing. And I got to say, I love this woman's hands. I love my woman. You know, I'm in love with her and everything. But I love this woman's hands. I got to be honest with you. And my wife even said that. She goes, I love her hands. And you can, you know where that idea goes. But anyway, we're not going to go down that road. This week's request is called Perfect by Doria Roberts. And it's a really nice song. It's a nice mellow song. And they also submitted a movie review. It's the same person. It was Kay and Kelly who submitted this. So thanks, Kay and Kelly, for the movie review and the song suggestion. The movie is Foxfire. It's from 1996. And the movie review at IMDb says, a story of five teenage girls who form an unlucky bond after beating up a teacher who has sexually harassed them. They build a solid friendship, but their wild ways begin to get out of control. So that's the movie review from Kay and Kelly. Thanks once again. Here's a Lucy update by Kim. Thanks, Kim. Lucy Lawless and Ted Raimi are starring in a web series soon to be out called Angel of Death. They are in supporting actor roles, and they are to what we believe to be Lucy's stunt double in Xena, Zoe Bell. She's the starring role. Check out my blog spot for a link for the preview on it, and you'll be able to see exactly what I'm talking about. The book review as well. Man, we just got a lot of reviews and stuff, so that's great. Keep them coming in. This is what I want. The book review this week is from my book wench, as usual, and it's called Conflict of Interest, and it's an ebook recommendation. I don't know much about ebooks, so if anybody knows ebooks out there, hey, you know, let me know, because I really don't do much about ebooks. But here's the ebook recommendation, and it's called Conflict and Interest, and the synopsis goes like this. It says, a workaholic detective, Aiden Carlisle, isn't looking for love, and certainly not at the law enforcement seminar she reluctantly agreed to attend. But their first lecture is not at all what she expected. Psychologist Dawn Kinsley has just found her place in life. After a failed relationship with a police officer, she has sworn to herself never to get involved with another cop again, but she feels a connection to Aiden from the very first moment. Can Aiden keep from crossing the line when a brutal crime threatens to keep them apart, before they've even gotten together? So, thanks to my book wench, and I'll have a link on my show notes for you to go to lbook.com, and you can see the review, the notes on that, and download it if you need to, or do whatever ebooks do, because like I said, I'm not familiar with ebooks. I'm the only person on the planet, I'm sure, who's not familiar with ebooks, but you know, hey, that's how things go. All right, so we're going to go ahead and do a recap on the 41st episode, last week's episode, and then rock into this week's, the 42nd episode of the Conquer series, Tale 2, Petal the Rose by the late L.J. Moss. So here we go with the recap. When we left our show last, Gabrielle and Xena had watched as the centaurs delivered the body of Bro, the centaur who admitted to killing Princess Tamara, to the Amazons as a sign of sincerity in their commitment to peace for the two nations. Gabrielle accepted as the now queen of the Amazons Ephany to explain to the Amazons Valeska's role in all that had happened. But things didn't seem right to Xena. It all seemed too perfect, so she did what she felt she had to do. She ordered Gabrielle escorted back to the safety of the castle, and she went to the temple to confront who she believed to be responsible for all of this, Ares. After fighting with Ares for a while, when things seemed most gloomy, Gabrielle stepped in front of Xena to protect her from his wrath. When it looked as he was going to strike, he couldn't, and it was then that Athena and Artemis appeared and explained that it was forbidden for Ares to harm Gabrielle. It was revealed that Gabrielle was under Athena's protection, and Xena lost it at that information. She wanted revenge on Gabrielle's sake, but the goddesses and Gabrielle calmed her down. Then Gabrielle then surprised everyone by asking if it was true that Ares could not harm her. Then she truly shocked everyone, as after an exchange of a few words with Ares, she slapped him. This annoyed the god to no end, and he demanded to know how Athena found out when Aphrodite appeared and explained her deception by Ares as well. Ares left after being summoned by Zeus himself. Athena then explained to Gabrielle how her and Xena's fate were meant to be, but albeit in a different way until Ares had interfered. Artemis then took Gabrielle for a little walk for some privacy to talk. Gabrielle then, upon her return, was asked by Athena if she wanted anything, and she asked for a gift and was granted by Athena as repayment for all she'd been through. It was later that we learned that the goddess had actually made Xena's heart 20 seasons younger so they could grow old together. Gabrielle the next day requested a formal hearing with Xena as the queen to the conqueror and negotiated a treaty between the Amazon centaurs and the realm. Xena later that day spent some time with Solon in her garden, and they had a serious heart-to-heart chat, and then Xena asked Solon to stand by her as one of her attendants in her wedding the next day. So that's where we left off with Petal of the Rose, Tale 2, the Conqueror series by the late L.G. Moss. And we continue on with Chapter 20, and what a feast there was when they were married. She stopped my wandering hands, fain jumping up from my lap, and then half-heartedly slapped my hands away, telling me I promised to write this evening. With an exasperated sigh, I gave up trying to bed her. I was hoping she had forgotten the promise I made only last night. It was the eve before my wedding. Gods above, I have existed in this mortal realm for 45 summers, and I am to be married for the first time in my life, tomorrow at sunset. Talk about a spinster. I have promised her that I will accept her tradition surrounding a royal marriage, meaning that we will spend tonight apart, and will not see one another until the ceremony in the great hall tomorrow evening. Given the fact that my more carnal nature makes an appearance wherever she is near, I couldn't help but make an attempt at seducing her when she kissed me good night. Alas, my future queen is a strong woman with an equally strong will. Frankly, she makes my stubborn pig-headed nature look tame in comparison. It's just that my lovely lady is more subtle about it. So I sit here, quill in hand, to continue on with the promise I gave her several moons back, that I would reveal something of myself for posterity. I admit, I thought the idea rather inane at first. I am neither bard nor poet. I am far from a masterful historian, have a tendency to remember things in a rather biased manner, mostly how they revolved around me. I do love to read, preferring histories and war stratagems to the flowering writings of Pindar and Ibycus. Philosophers are my favorite. Socrates and Pythagoras could entertain me for days, but it was Plato's dialogues which captured my mind. His knowledge of reality fascinated me. Perhaps that is why I spared his life. Ironic how things that happened when I was quite young appear fresh in my mind so many seasons later. It was right after I conquered Athens and destroyed a majority of the city, mostly because of what Pericles did to my homelands during the Peloponnesian War. I was so foolish in those days. I killed to make a point that might have been impressed just as strongly without the bloodshed. Critias and Charmides were the only two I was after that day. They were extremists who I couldn't afford to let live after I took Athens. It was unfortunate that Socrates was so closely involved with them. I had to execute all three. I remember when they brought Plato, Socrates' disciple, before me. I was rather impressed with the young man, and believe me, you had to be quite extraordinary to do that in those days. He was from a good family, even served in the cavalry for his military service. I found his views in life in general to be refreshing and inventive. Perhaps it was the mere fact that he shared his bed with men and not women that caused us to get along so well. There was no sexual tension between the two of us, and I think that and the man's uncommonly quick wit were what saved his neck that day. He started an academy after Athens was rebuilt. I have often received invitations to visit him, but I have never gone. It hurts too much to go back to that place where I destroyed so much. Perhaps she would wish to go. Gods, I know she would be in Elysium to enter that academy and speak with one of the greatest philosophers Greece has ever known. I'll keep that in mind, since there are so many places I wish to show her. Well, I left my memories for the past carry me away, but that is what she had in mind when she thrust the quill in my hand for the very first time. I sit here and smile when I think of engaging way she had of coercing me into doing things that I sometimes would have done for her anyway.
Zena.
Hmm?
Zena.
Gabrielle's voice came at me louder this time. I knew she was waiting for me to raise my eyes from the scroll I was reading. She detested talking to the top of my head, bent over a scroll as I was during our morning meal. Usually this time of day I gave my consort, but I had a full day of hearings to preside over and was trying to stay caught up. I can read and listen at the same time, little one. I responded. I finally lifted my face to gaze into intelligent green eyes across from me.
I know, she smiled, but I like looking into your beautiful face.
I felt the beginnings of a blush creep up my neck and offered her a crooked smile in return. Her forward comment flustered me. She knows what it does to me when she says things like that. Of course, I think that's why she says them half the time. I sat my scrolls aside and took her hand in mine from across the table. All right, my love. Now that you have my beautiful attention, what may I do for you?
When you say it like that, I think you might do anything for me,
she replied coyly. I didn't yet realize the danger I was in.
I would,
I answered without hesitation.
I'd like for you to write down your thoughts, sort of history of your life.
She said softly, in halting tones. No. I still smiled.
But you just said...
I lied. Pick something else. Some new gowns.
Zena.
Some new scrolls, perhaps. A case to carry him.
Zena.
She said even more softly, with more of a whispering tone. Maybe a horse of your very own. You wanted to learn how to ride. I trailed off, looking to eyes that appeared as if they might cry at any moment. God, she's good. She sat there with her delicate hand within my own. A small, childlike expression on her face. She didn't have to say another word. We both knew who was going to win this argument. Oh, okay. I relented. So, as a fearsome battle, it was slightly on the tame side, but it was an example of what I see for my future as a married woman. She has the ability to cause me to feel so much, a sensation that is new for me. Whether in our bed or seated beside me at a formal dinner, she instills feelings of love and desire, family and home. I find that I had been looking for her all my life, and never even knew it, and now that I have her beside me, I won't ever take a chance on losing her. I have said it before, but the words were never truer than this moment. The story of the conqueror does not begin until she steps into the tale, for the tale of the conqueror cannot accurately be told without the telling of Gabrielle. I finally put my quill aside. I reread this opening passage once more and smile. The candles in my study have long since burned down, having left me with only the oil lamp to see by. Gabrielle is surely sound asleep by now. How could she know that I've gone to lie in our empty bed a dozen times already? Where am I getting this unexpected energy? Usually I'm exhausted by this time, and the only thing that keeps me awake is worry. Now I feel as if I could engage in any physical activity until the sun comes up. It must be my nerves, and the anticipation of what tomorrow brings. I've been unable to find my way into Morpheus's realm without Gabrielle lying beside me, so I rise one last time to finish the scroll to which I've been working. I'm also adding some final additions to a special gift to be used in the ceremony. Tomorrow evening at sunset, that is to be the moment of the most joyous event in my life. Actually, when I look outside my window and see that the moon is falling lower in the horizon, I realize that today is the day. I will seal this scroll for now and reopen it in a fortnight's time. I know I will only get away with the short respite before Gabrielle bids me write of our wedding experience. I already feel lightheaded and slightly ill at the prospect of making an ass out of myself in front of most of the land. Athena, give me strength. Are you done with that yet? I asked in a peevish tone that indicated I was rapidly losing my patience.
Almost,
Solon replied. He finally hooked the last button of the cape around my shoulder of the collar of my jacket.
You look like a little pale, Mother. Kind of like you're going to lose your morning meal.
Did that already. Twice, I added. I saw Atreus grin over in the corner, but he at least had the good manners to hide it when I glared in his direction.
You do want to do this, don't you?
Solon asked. I could see confusion in his expression. Of course! I snapped. I took a deep breath. I'm sorry, Solon. I don't mean to be so ill-tempered. Yes, I do want this very much. I just get uncomfortable when I know everyone's eyes are on me.
You?
He asked in an astonished tone. I guess I thought that nothing ever affected you in that way.
Well, now you know that I have weaknesses just like everyone else.
Well, Conqueror.
Atreus placed a gentle hand on my shoulder.
If it makes you feel any better, I think that you're standing beside Gabriel on this day. Not all the eyes will be on you.
He grinned, and suddenly I was struck at how much he reminded me of my older brother, Taurus. Thank you, Atreus. It's nice to know that you're here to keep my ego on an even keel. Solon laughed out loud, and Atreus continued grinning.
Aye, Conqueror.
We stood about in one of the private rooms off the Great Hall. Philatius, one of my lead advisors, came in and instructed us on the evening's event. Stand here, kneel there. I decided for this one night to simply follow orders. I presumed I'd look less the fool that way. The bonding ceremony would be followed by Gabriel's crowning. Philatius had said that the timing of the whole evening was critical. I know this had something to do with sunset, but since I'd never had this kind of ceremony within the palace walls, I had no real idea of what he meant. I wondered if Gabriel was feeling this nervous, or if marriage was again one of those things that women like her understood and took in their stride. Then again, Gabriel was accustomed to hiding her emotions. If I was a different woman in Gabrielle's presence, then my consort would certainly be the same in front of me. Gabriel never feared displaying her fears and inadequacies before me, but old habits are the hardest to break. When we were in the company of others, Gabrielle's emotions were usually as masked off as mine. It amazes me most days that two people, such as us, never found courage to express our love for one another. Philatius was back again, this time indicating that we should make our way to the die. When I walked up from the room, Atreus stood to my left and Solon to my right. The room I was exiting was near the back of the Great Hall, which meant we had to walk the entire length of the hall to reach our appointed destination. I said a quick prayer to Athena, requesting that I not trip or embarrass myself too badly today. Although we're all human, a foolish misstep today would be remembered for seasons to come. The hall had been filled with seats, with the exception of a purple-carpeted area that became the center aisle. As we walked towards the front of the hall, or the side that faced the outside patio, everyone in the congregation either bowed or curtsied. I nodded a few to whom I knew very well enough. The room was filled to the rafters, and I couldn't even hazard a guess as to how many people was there. Most likely they wanted to see if my consort had enough sense to leave me standing there at the die. The entire partition and tapestries had been removed from the western wall. The sun had not yet slipped past the protection of the lofty trees to sink behind the mountains, so the daylight lit up the entire hall. There were a number of musicians set up on the patio outside, along with the enormous banquet being prepared for the evening. Since our marriage vows did not become absolute until sunset, it would be a late evening. It would not be considered a successful celebration unless most of the partygoers saw the sun rise on their way home. When I reached the die, I took 4 steps to the top and breathed a sigh of relief. Then we stood waiting. I wondered if I looked as stiff and uncomfortable as I felt in the tight, short-waisted jacket. I glanced around the room and thought that Gabrielle was truly loved the way the staff had decorated. Roses from someone else's gardens adorned every space in the hall. On top of the die, just in front of me when I faced outside, was a small altar. 2 golden and jewel-decorated crowns lay there in a velvet cloth. Behind the crowns, in a vase, were 2 of my special roses that Gabrielle loved so well. I wondered who had been responsible for that. 2 women stood behind the altar. Lydia was a high priest in our Athenian temple. She was some Caesars older than I, and I remembered when we first constructed the temple, she had traveled from Athens to select young women to serve in the temple. I don't recall how it happened, but she never went back to Athens. I only know that she had been there since the beginning of the empire, and that it was fitting that she preside over my bonding ceremony. To Lydia's right stood Satina, the Amazon princess. Gabrielle's new heritage brought other concerns regarding our ceremony. After some careful consideration, the Amazons were asked to incorporate some of their traditions into the event. And Satina and Aphne came to me yesterday and told me that I would be accepted to provide the binding tie. I was at a loss. I knew what it was from my time with the Amazons early in my life. I just never thought I would have to make one. I'm sure everyone thought I would have Anya come up with something, but I was determined. The bonding tie was to be wrapped around our joined hands near the end of the ceremony. The woman asking for hand in marriage was usually the one to take the tie. The woman asking for the hand in marriage was usually the one to make the tie, and I had seen some stunning crafted ones in my day. I found myself still working on mine, even as Gabrielle slept in a separate room last night. I admit, I did have Anya assist me with most of it. She was good sport about it. She even gave me the embroidery materials I asked for. spent the rest of the night writing and sewing a pattern of a lion's head into both ends of the silk cloth. The cloth has a special meaning behind it that only Gabrielle might recognize. It was cut from the silk of one of my traveling robes. Gabrielle had first been presented to me while wearing that robe. As long as I live, I will never forget the sight of her kneeling before me in that dressing gown that was too large for her. It had slipped off of one shoulder, and she had looked that very picture of innocent sensuality. I looked around the room as my mind rambled on. My eyes caught the olive wood statue that hung down in front of open the wall to the patio. It was usually up high, so you couldn't see it. I thought its positioning rather odd for this ceremony. The statue was of Athena on a spirited mount, giving chase during a hunt. She had a long spear in hand. I always thought of it as the most stunning work. At the end of the spear, set in the blade portion, was a large jewel as big as my fist. Rumor had it that it was a diamond, but I never believed it was more than crystals such as the ones found in abundance throughout the caverns in the area. The statue was hung quite low, which registered as strange. I took another deep breath. That action was becoming a habit of late. In a matter of moments, I would be a married woman. I was the conqueror of the known world, after all. What manner of magic could Gabrielle possibly possess that could scare me? Nothing, right? So why in Hades was I so terrified? I fidgeted and shifted my weight from foot to foot, cursing under my breath, having to wear such uncomfortable boots and clothing. I wondered what more, what would I do to mess up the day, and that's when I saw her. Gabrielle paused at the end of the carpeted aisle. In that moment, my cares about anything, at all, merely vanished into the air. That sick feeling in the pit of my stomach, the headache that had been gnawing at the fingers under my consciousness, even my uncomfortable attire. Suddenly there was only an incredible feeling of joy and unworthiness. To say she looked beautiful seemed so mundane, but words failed me at the moment, just as they fail me now in telling of the tale. I only remember the feelings, and I find them so difficult to translate into words. If anyone ever asked me in the future, I would say up until this moment, in my entire life, this was my best day. Gabrielle wore a traditional Greek gown, all flowing pieces of sheer material. The train that was situated around her waist gathered behind her and fell to the ground. It appeared to drag along the ground a full 15 hand length behind her. Gabrielle was flanked on either side by her two witnesses, as I had been. Anya and Scylla looked as lovely as I'd ever seen them. Scylla definitely appeared to be the more nervous of the two. Gabrielle had asked the young woman because they had formed a true friendship, and not just as employer and servant. It took some convincing on my consort's part to finally persuade Scylla that it would not be out of place for a woman who worked in our home to stand alongside us on this day. I enjoyed Gabrielle's attitude. It was as if a clean breeze had begun to sweep through the empire. Who better to instill such feelings of equality than a slave who was about to become a queen? The musicians played softly in the background. It was the customary music for a Greek wedding, but I never heard one note. I only had eyes for the woman coming down the aisle to marry me. Three Amazon guards, dressed in full mask and looking as though they took their job very seriously, walked ahead of Gabrielle and her witnesses. In keeping with the sharing the young Amazon queen, the three Empire soldiers, who made up Gabrielle's personal guard, followed close behind the whole procession. My brain propelled me into action just as Gabrielle reached the steps to the die. I positioned myself on the second stair and offered my hand to my consort. I wanted to say something to her just then. I wanted to tell her how magnificent she looked, and how happy I was that she chose me. I wanted to express to her how much I loved her, and what I wouldn't give to always have her in my life. Instead, I was struck dumb. My tongue turned into a wooden block, and so I settled for my best smile to convey what was in my heart. I knew it fell far short of what was in me, but Gabrielle, in her infinite capacity to know me, simply looked up and whispered, "Me too." She took her place beside me, and suddenly everything I was supposed to do, every instruction I had been given, fully disappeared from my mind. Gabrielle must have noticed the sheer panic in my eyes, and think for a heartbeat or two, I was slightly perturbed that she didn't look as unnerved as I felt. Her calm demeanor belied her true emotion, however. When she took my hand, seemingly to calm me, I felt how warm her skin and how damp her palms were. Gabrielle was always cold. The very first moment she wakes in the morning, she burrows herself against me, bundling the blankets all around her. She shivers, and I know she must feel the cold much more so than I must. I often wondered if it wasn't something psychological. Perhaps one of the many abuses she suffered during her time as a slave. Whatever it was, I knew if the Gabrielle was warm, and her palm sweaty, she must indeed have been as nervous as I was. I must be a sick woman, for at that time, that knowledge pleased me just a small bit. I think it was simply the matter of misery finding companionship in numbers. Gabrielle and I went through a series of small formalities. We both did exactly as we were told to, and no calamities arose. It was, basically as I suspected, stand here, say this, turn this way. We were headed for the home stretch as both Lydia and Satina came to stand directly before the two of us. This was a part of marriage ceremony, where I'd seen grown men either bolt from the room or break down and cry like an infant. It came down to our final vows. Lydia began by first nodding to me, and then began the questions I had been anticipating. Zena, Lord Conqueror of the Greek Empire, do you stand before the patriot goddess of the Empire, Athena, along with these assembled witnesses, to declare your intention to wed Gabrielle of Potidaea, queen to the Amazons?
Yes, I do.
It is your intention to acknowledge Gabrielle's right to become queen to the Empire, and to crown her as such before all in attendance.
Yes, it is.
Lydia then indicated that I was to kneel before Athena's altar. I dropped to one knee, and as the priestess reached around and took hold of the golden crown on the right, she gently settled it on my head. I just knew I would have a headache before the evening was over. It was one reason why I had only worn the blessed thing a total of 3 times since I became ruler. It was incredibly heavy. I kept pushing it around in my head until Lydia glared at me.
"Can't help it. It's uncomfortable,"
I complained under my breath. Gabrielle smiled as Lydia continued to eye me. I stood up, thankful that I hadn't done anything to make a fool out of myself. Lydia then turned towards Gabrielle. "Gabrielle, queen to the northern Amazon nation, do you stand before the patron goddess of the Empire, Athena, along with these assembled witnesses, to declare your intention to wed Zena of Amphipolis, the Lord Conqueror of the Greek Empire?"
"Yes, I do,"
Gabrielle answered. It surprised me when I heard Lydia recite the name of my birthplace. It had been many seasons since I had been known as Zena of Amphipolis. At first, the people of Amphipolis forced me to leave my home. The people blamed me for the family and friends who died during the fighting when Cortese invaded the village. They wanted someone to blame, and I suppose I was handy. Even my own mother cursed me. When I took the moniker of the Destroyer of Nations, that proceeded to lay siege over the known world, that's when the people of Amphipolis refused to acknowledge their home as my birthplace. After all these seasons, to hear the word Amphipolis in association with me sounded strange to my ears. I listened as Lydia continued with Gabrielle, much as the same as the priestess had done with me. "It is your intention to acknowledge your right to the queen to the Empire, to accept the crown and all its responsibilities before all in attendance."
"Yes, it is,"
Gabrielle answered once again. Lydia nodded to me, and I assisted Gabrielle to kneel before the altar. The priestess handed me the smaller of the 2 crowns, and I gently placed it atop Gabrielle's head. The young woman grimaced immediately. I helped her rise, and Anya insisted in returning the crown to its original state. Gabrielle gave me a sideways glance.
"Why is it so heavy?"
she asked. Her eyes rolled upward, indicating the crown on her head. I nearly laughed out loud.
"See? It's not just me," I muttered to Lydia.
Lydia shook her head at both of us as we were misbehaving children. I looked over at Gabrielle. She looked so regal and every bit the queen that she now was. It was amazing, really. With just a few words and a piece of jewelry, albeit a large piece of jewelry, Gabrielle was not the queen of the Greek Empire. Although there was some small bit of business left, she actually had to marry me. Lydia and Satina exchanged places before us. The Amazon priestess would lead us through the actual bonding ceremony. This was more reminiscent of the Amazon ceremony than a traditional royal wedding. Satina looked between the two of us.
"Who provides the bonding tie?" she asked.
I would have loved to capture Gabrielle's expression when I spoke up. "I do." I turned to Solon, who had the cloth tucked inside his tunic. He pulled it out and handed it to me. I, in turn, handed it to Satina.
"Will you face one another and join hands?"
Satina requested. We did as instructed, and we were able to look at one another fully for the first time. I watched as tears filled Gabrielle's eyes, as Satina loosely wrapped the green silk tie around our clasped hands. She instantly recognized it for what it was, and it appeared to touch her heart. I can be very thick at times, and I am positive there will be future days when I might disappoint my wife greatly. But some days, I do things right. I occasionally have flares of brilliance,
and taking the time to create this Amazon binding tie was one of those ties.
Just as this physical tie binds you together,
Satina began,
let your love for one another do the same. Xena, do you agree to this match?
I do. I was never more terrified, yet more certain about any course of action in my entire life.
Do you promise Gabrielle your love, trust, and fidelity as long as you shall live?
I do.
Gabrielle,
the priestess turned to the young woman before me.
Do you agree to this match?
I do.
And do you promise, Xena, your love, trust, and fidelity for as long as you shall live?
I do.
Gabrielle's gaze never left mine. With all eyes now upon us, we could have been alone for all the thought we paid them. There were only two of us at that moment. No matter how old I become, or how feeble my mind might grow, I will always remember this moment. I would remember the song that was played, the way Gabrielle's green eyes sparkled, and the light scent of the perfumed oil she had bathed in. Not one detail would ever fade with time. This day was to forever be in my heart.
Then, with the blessings of Athena and Artemis, I declare your bond complete, Satina said in a loud voice.
The Amazon priestess slipped the binding ties loose from around our joined hands. Then she reached in and fastened the cloth from around Gabrielle's slim waist. Lydia looked out towards the outside patio before turning back to us.
The timing is perfect, she said.
I thought it odd because that's exactly what Philatius kept telling me, that for the evening to be perfect, timing was critical. Lydia motioned us both to step forward to the altar and to remove the crowns from our heads. Athena's priestess took both of the heavy gold circles and placed them upon the altar. Each crown was encrusted with a seemingly random pattern of jewels, and they caught slivers of the light as the sunset crept down into the horizon. Lydia set the larger crown down into a circular groove embedded into the wood of the altar. She then placed a smaller crown onto its own carved space beside another one, except that the smaller crown came down and interlocked with the first. They looked as though they were two circles forever sealed together. I was to quickly discover that this wasn't the only magic of illusion that the crowns provided.
Perfect. Simply perfect,
Lydia commented to herself. Out of the corner of my eye, I spied Philetius, grinning like an idiot. Gabrielle and I exchanged curious glances. Frankly, I feared that the excitement had gotten to him. Just as Gabrielle tried to cover her growing smile over the spectacle before us, the sun dipped low into the sky. The moment the sun appeared the apex of the mountain range in the distance, a sharp beam of light struck the exact center of that crystal in the center of Athena's spear. At first, the crystal burst into a thousand tiny rays of sunlight. Within the space of a dozen heartbeats, the illumination converged into one single shaft of light that struck the golden crowns upon the altar. It was almost amazing thing I've ever seen. A collective gasp came from the many people assembled within the hall. My own added to the mix. Suddenly the hall was filled with stars. Not just any stars, but the entire great hall held the summer sky. Above us on the high ceiling and around us on the walls was an exact replica of the nighttime sky, and the stars that twinkled like diamonds against the black silk cloth. I turned round and round, my mouth surely hanging agape. I felt Gabrielle's arm slip about my waist. I looked down into her face and beheld the same awe that mine must be reflecting at that moment. Her eyes expressed a question that her voice couldn't ask. I never knew, was all I could think to say. I held my new wife as I stared around us at the wonder that would surely come just this once in our lifetimes. It would never happen come again. Of that I was absolutely sure. For Gabrielle would be the only queen I would ever take. If anything ever happened to separate us, gods forbid enmity or death, I would never join with anyone this way again. As I felt Gabrielle's hold tighten on me, I knew that she felt the very same way. It seemed as if we were receiving a blessing from very cosmos, from Gaia herself. The air within the hall pulsed with energy. It lasted for long moments, and then, quickly as it came, the magic faded. The servants had obviously been well coached by Philatius and others who were aware of the phenomenon that would happen. The lamps and candles were lit immediately, and the guests in the hall looked around as if dazed. We all returned our attention to the task at hand. I looked up to see Lydia smiling from ear to ear.
Now you know, Conqueror, why I never returned to my place in Athens. I have waited for half my life to see the blessing of Athena, Lydia said.
It was something that the guests of the royal wedding would talk about for the rest of their lives. They would tell their children, and some would nod their heads in disbelief. All who attended the day, however,
would remember that for one moment in time, all the heavens came together. For me personally, it would forever be a reminder that I was finally doing it right. For the first time in so long, I could say that I was proud of my actions. Loving Gabrielle and accepting her love of me seemed to cause the world to tip slightly. It was as if nothing would ever be the same again. My world as I had made it was about to change. I had no idea at the time just how much. The feast had been going on for candlemarks. Many of the guests were either drunk or well on their way to that state. Guards and soldiers in and around the palace had been schooled in diplomacy for this occasion. They would be respectful, but keep peace, and encourage some of the more inebriated guests to sleep it off in the palace. Gabrielle was truly the most beautiful woman in attendance. I may have been slightly biased, but not by much. She had removed the train on her gown, so she could move about more easily. We ate, drank, and danced. We enjoyed one another's company till a number of women requested Gabrielle's presence. I always had one eye trained across the room on Gabrielle, but I soon joined in the challenges of some of the officers and the Amazons. Usually the challenges were competitions in sport or drinking. I tactfully bowed out of the latter. I had no intention of going to bed drunk on this night. Frankly, getting Gabrielle into our own bed had been all I could think about the entire time we were dancing. I admitted as much to her, discreetly whispering in her ear until her face blushed at a stunning pink color. I had no idea what had come over me, but I felt as Anita had an experience in at least a dozen seasons. At one time, when I was a young woman, sex was like that for me. It was more than something that I used as a pleasurable diversion. It was a driving need that usually caused a pounding ache between my legs. The difference between now and 20 or so seasons ago was that now I knew that only one woman's touch could satisfy my need. Back then, 1,000 women could not quench my thirst. I found myself the last contestant in an arm wrestling match. When I sat down to the table, Ephany sat across from me. We both grinned. The Amazon couldn't hide her admiration for my wife, but I knew two things for sure. One, Ephany would never do anything that would disrespect either Gabrielle or me. Two, a physical challenge would be the only way I could ever hope to come close to pounding the Amazon for those thoughts.
Ah, at last you have her, Conqueror, she muttered as we set our elbows on the table.
I do indeed, I answered with a smile. Not another word was spoken. We each produced our own feral grin, and a look of fire as we struggled toward victory. She had me first, but that was always my way. I liked to test my opponents. I let her pull my arm over until she felt victory was hers. It was with sheer strength that I came back, and I pulled my arm upright again. I held her arm straight up until I felt a surge of adrenaline, as I'd not felt in seasons, course through my body. I graced her with a smile that could have been a snarl. It was as if I bared my teeth as a warning. One more heartbeat elapsed, and in one swift moment, I slammed the Amazon's arm to the table. A large cheer went up from the soldiers, and even a few exclamations of surprise from some of the Amazons. Ebony stood as I did, and she rubbed her hand while staring at me.
"Your message is well received, Conqueror,"
she smiled. I returned the smile with a friendly slap on my back.
"Tonight belongs to the warriors, my friend.
There are more than a few lovely ladies who have never been in the company of an Amazon. Perhaps you should drink up." The Amazon returned my good humor. "You're right, Conqueror. Perhaps there are a few high-born noblewomen who have never had the taste of an Amazon love before. So, how does one go about in the introductions?" I groaned at her play of words.
"Come with me."
We sauntered over to where Gabrielle was surrounded by a lovely circle of women. In all humility, I would admit that when the two of us came into their midst, more than a few drawers dropped open. I stood behind Gabrielle, desperately trying to keep my hands from wandering. I placed them on her shoulders and then introduced the Amazon regent to the group. It didn't take long before at least three of the women had taken an earnest interest in our friend. I also learned that Ephany could be the charmer when she wanted to be. When I turned my attention away to focus on Gabrielle, I knew that Ephany would be a busy woman for the rest of the night. I bent to kiss Gabrielle's neck, and she lifted her hand and placed it around my neck. I pressed into her, and I wondered if she could feel the trembling of my body. I splayed my hand across her abdomen, probably lower down her belly than I should have in public. I felt her breath hitch as I pulled her back against me, and I whispered in her ear, "Follow me." It wasn't a command or a simple request. It was a desperate plea. I think she recognized that fact by the tone of my voice. I held her hand and walked off to the back of the hall.
I quietly opened the door of the room that I had been in earlier that day. I hurriedly lit one lamp and turned back to Gabrielle. She stood in front of the large desk, with a slightly confused expression on her face. I slipped one arm around her waist and drew her into me so that not an inch of space existed between us. I kissed her gently at first, but her mouth eagerly sought mine, which simply fueled my desire all the more. We took turns pulling and pressing against one another. It quickly brought us both to a state of some acute need. I pushed her back slightly until she was sitting on the edge of the desk. I could feel my kisses become more intense, more insistent, even demanding. I pressed my weight back against her, and as I lowered her back to the top of the desk, I swept papers and small objects out of my way with my right hand. "Gods, how I want you," I groaned. A low guttural moan, such as did not usually emanate from Gabrielle, came rolling from her chest. I felt her legs wrap around mine. That sound, the feel of her enveloped around me, was all the encouragement that I needed to continue in that fashion. I straightened myself to remove the jacket I still wore. Gabrielle sat up, pushing the garment from my shoulders as soon as I had unfastened it. She tugged at the bottom of my shirt, and I temporarily let her have her way. I pushed the soft material of her gown up and along her legs, stopping when I reached her thighs. I slid my hands in further until I had firm hold of her backside, and pulled her body against my own once more. I slid the fabric of her dress down on her shoulder, and exposed a perfectly beautiful breast. Her skin was flushed pink, and her nipple pebbled and tight with excitement. It was simply too inviting to resist. My lips, my teeth, my tongue, they found every inch of Gabrielle's body absolutely delectable. I could barely understand my own body. Perhaps it was that we were now married, or that I'd finally found all that I desired. Whatever the cause, I was experiencing sensations that I hadn't since I was a much younger woman. Coupled with my love and passion for this woman before me, I was insatiable. I could not touch her, kiss her, or love her enough. She lifted her hips as I slipped the silk breeches off of her. I tossed them away and kissed my way down her body. I paused and pushed the silky material further up her belly. I kissed the damp curls between her legs, and I allowed my tongue to flick lightly over her wet folds in a teasing manner. I felt her fingers entwine themselves within my hair. She attempted to pull me closer, lifting her hips at the same time. Her moans grew louder, and her legs trembled against me. I draped her legs so they would lay along my back and shoulders, and I allowed myself one long, languid stroke against her sex. I pulled away before she could press herself more fully against my face.
"Zina,"
Gabrielle at last breathlessly pleaded. I looked up, waiting until I heard the words. She knew exactly what I wanted, and in any other circumstance, she might have attempted to hold out longer. But at this point, her need to be taken seemed as great as my wish to have her.
"Please,"
she begged. I didn't hesitate one moment. Quick to reward my wife's willing submission, I buried my tongue deep within her, pulling back only to lovingly stroke the small area of swollen flesh that desired my most intimate attention. I gently sucked on a bit of flesh until I could feel Gabrielle's orgasm begin. She convulsed against me, stifling her cry in mid-voice. I think she might have suddenly realized where we were. She came hard and fast to me, and I continued to kiss the silky wet flesh until her quivering ceased. Still breathing deeply, I helped her to sit up straight, her legs wrapping even more tightly around me. She brushed my shirt aside to suck at the skin at the base of my neck. I murmured.
"Not yet, my love. I'm not through with you yet,"
I whispered seductively into her ear. She moved her hands to cover my breast, pinching and then releasing the taut nipples. Her roaming hands pressed up between my legs, and I involuntarily spread them further apart. I felt her pulling loose the laces of my trousers.
"What are you up to, little one?"
I teased as I gripped both her hands.
"Please, Zina. I want to feel you against me. Please."
I laughed.
"And when someone opens the door, what will they think when I have my trousers around my ankles?"
"Oh?"
She pulled back slightly and looked down at her own disarrayed attire.
"And you don't mind them seeing me this way?"
"Yes,
but I'll be the only one with my bare ass facing hundreds of gawking guests. I kissed her and she chuckled evilly.
I'm willing to take my chances on that scenario, Conker, she replied.
Before I could take her from a hold of her hands, she wriggled free and pressed the heel of her left hand directly against me. The small rotating move she added left my knees weak. Then, with a lightning quickness, she pressed her fingers into the spot on the inside of my thigh. I gasped as the effect of the pressure point registered within my brain.
Oh, God! Off! Get them off!
I now begged. It took only heartbeats until my trousers were down around my ankles, and I had one knee braced upon the desk beside Gabrielle. I groaned in relief at the feel of Gabrielle's fingers upon my drenched sex. Under previous circumstances, Gabrielle's pressure points led to some rather mind-numbing orgasms. In the mood I was in tonight, I could only speculate how the building pressure would release itself. I suddenly envisioned my body literally exploding. I felt Gabrielle's free hand reaching for mine, guiding me to her own center. I easily slipped two fingers inside of her, just as her mouth covered my own. The sound of pleasure she made, the way her moan vibrated against my lips, caused an additional flood of wetness from my own body. We moved together without words, only numerous sounds of pleasure. The physical need to be pleasured was great, but greater still was the need to have Gabrielle. True, our lovemaking had always been inventive and passionate, but I always took care to do everything in my power not to make Gabrielle feel used. Her days as a slave, having been taken in any manner and as rough or as coarsely as pleased her master, were not times that were far behind her. It had not even been a full season since we were together, let alone in love with one another. Although I wanted her in that way now, simply because she fueled my passion beyond anything I'd ever known, I was reticent to have her in such a manner. I was unsure about her feelings, thus fearful to treat her body as something I possessed. It's what I wanted at that moment, however. I wanted to claim her, to exert my right of ownership. But the truth was, the feelings were quite reciprocal. I wanted Gabrielle to feel the same way about me. I wanted her to want me, to claim me as no other ever had or ever would. As in all the things between the two of us, I needn't have worried so much. Her next breathless words affected my libido more than any other had ever had.
Oh, God, Zina! Harder! God's harder!
I did as she asked. I forgot that I was always promised myself to treat Gabrielle like the most delicate flower in my garden. I made love to her with as much passion and physical force as her body dictated. When she requested more, I gave it to her. Anything at all that she requested, I immediately provided. I felt Gabrielle's thumb press into the hollow space high up on my inner thigh, and I realized she loosed the pressure point that had kept me suspended, moments away from my release. Our bodies and our excitement melded together perfectly. I was so caught up in Gabrielle's pleasure that I had nearly forgotten my own, until I felt her tighten around my fingers, the area pulsating wildly. All at once, my body felt as if it had exploded into 1,000 shards of light. The pieces burst from me with such a force that I loudly cried out Gabrielle's name. She fell back against the desk, and my body followed, lying over her. The pieces of my conscious self were softly floating back down to earth, and reattaching themselves to my physical body. That's what it felt like, anyway. Gabrielle and I both stopped breathing and looked anxiously towards the door. We heard the sound of music and loud conversation, and released our breaths once we realized that we hadn't been noticed. Looking back at one another, we laughed, and I kissed her soundly. She wrapped her arms around my neck and kissed my ear.
I don't even understand where that came from. I mean, I've never wanted. That was...
Her words trailed off as she tried to form some conclusion about the different sort of passion we just shared. I could not see into her heart completely, but I could share what I knew of her. I think it's called coming into your own, love. Gabrielle looked at me with a confused expression, and I leaned up on one elbow to look at her better. Any sort of loving such as this would have reminded the old Gabrielle of a time when she had no choice in the matter. Therefore, it would have caused you emotional pain. It wouldn't even have occurred to you to find it pleasurable. Perhaps it's different now that you know your own body and your heart will always be safe with me. And they always shall, my wife. I punctuated the sting with a gentle kiss.
I'm so happy that I'm married to you, Xena,
Gabriel said in a rush of emotion. You've made me quite a happy woman as well, little one. Will I make a good wife, do you think? She kissed my nose and released her hold on my neck.
I think you will make a splendid wife, my conqueror.
We both jump at the tip and knock at the door.
Maybe they'll go away. It's locked, isn't it?
Gabriel asked. I find it a most interesting time to ask that question, my dear. We paused. The knock came again. A male voice was clearing his throat.
Conqueror!
It was Atreus's hesitant voice.
Go away, Atreus,
I teased as I pulled away and started to redress. I helped Gabrielle up and scrambled around the room in an attempt to find the panties I'd taken off of her. She straightened her clothes while we heard Atreus continue to shuffle around the outside.
Conqueror, the governor of Argos wishes to bid you farewell.
Atreus commented softly from the other side of the door.
All right, we're coming,
I shouted out. Gabrielle replaced a comb in her hair, and we looked at one another and burst into a fit of laughter over my words. We laughed like two schoolgirls. Well, at least not until we get upstairs again, I said, wiping her eyes, and our laughter began again. Finally calm and presentable, I opened the door to face my captain. Atreus stood there, his manner as staid as ever.
Lord Conqueror, my queen,
he said as he nodded to both of us. Atreus quickly explained that Thalpius, the governor of Argos, wished to speak to Gabrielle and I before he left to return home.
Did anyone realize we were gone?
I asked my captain. Atreus grinned at that question, and I knew this was going to be good.
Not a single solitary soul realized the two of you were missing.
He clapped me on the back, and just before he moved away, he said,
Right up until the moment they heard you scream out Gabrielle's name.
Atreus laughed as he walked ahead of us, a sound that rarely came from him so heartily. I cringed, and I'm sure my face was turning scarlet, yet I tried to retain what shred of dignity I had left.
Look at it this way,
Gabrielle whispered to me as she tried to hide her own embarrassment.
You've just become a very human in their eyes, my conqueror.
2 nights had passed since our wedding. On this night I sat alone in my chair before the window. The heavy tapestry was fastened back to expose the night sky to my pensive gaze. I left Gabrielle sound asleep in our bedchamber. The first pass of the sun after our wedding was spent in bed. Gabrielle and I took turns wearing one another out. We made love, enjoyed a relaxing hot bath, and sometimes talked by the fire. All our meals were delivered to our rooms, and we enjoyed every moment of our personal time together. My body ached somewhat now. Seemed as if I were trying to make up for the lack of sexual activity for the last few seasons, all in the space of a few days. I had my suspicions at my renewed vigor. I wasn't sure if I was insane, or if the physical manifestation of energy was real. I debated telling Gabrielle of my sudden youthful feeling. How would she feel to know that God sometimes took an active hand in my life? Today, Gabrielle spent time with the Amazons, took care of a number of palace situations that demanded the Queen's touch. That simply meant that they were too diplomatic a nature to have me attend to them. Solon and I spent a great deal of time mapping out his position within my new family. It gladdened my heart to see Solon and Gabrielle so at ease with one another. It made things easier all around. Calliopus and I spoke briefly regarding Solon's future, and while I could see that it broke the centaur's heart to give up his claim to the young man, I reminded him of his place in Solon's life. I assured Calliopus that we would talk more before he returned north. Solon wished to travel to see the lands he had only heard about in stories. I was looking for an intelligent man to serve as emissaries to my court. Now that my conquering days were past me, it took more than my might of my large army to deal with provinces outside my immediate realm. I told Solon I had an idea, but it would require diplomacy and a hard study on his part. He agreed, and I spoke to Yupan in the afternoon. The old man had expressed a wish to return to the province of Qin to meet with people he knew, and to visit places that held his memories. He surprised me by agreeing rather quickly to my plan. I suppose he's grown rather fond of Solon, and the boy's constant attention as a young man was eager to learn about the old healer's homeland. We agreed that Yupan would travel back under the protection of the Empire, and that he would travel along with Solon as an emissary. I was thankful that it would be Yupan's tutelage Solon was under. The old man could teach Solon much. As happy as I had been over my new marriage, I still felt like I was losing Solon again. I'd missed so much of his life.
Now that we were mother and son, I felt a selfish desire to have him beside me for a while before he was a grown man, and I had to allow him his freedom. I would worry less while he traveled with you, Pan. Odd how things turn out the way they are supposed to. I could ask for no better teacher and a companion for my son than the man who brought me so much.
Zena.
I looked up to find a sleepy-looking wife with a full robe pulled close around her.
Aren't you tired?
She asked. A little, but you know how I get at times. Come here, love. Gabrielle wasted no time, curling herself into my lap, her body pressed closely to my own. I was just thinking, mostly. I said,
thinking or worrying?
I smiled at her intuitive response. Perhaps a little worry, but a very small bit. I described just how small by holding up my thumb and forefinger hair's width apart. That caused her to smile and instantly my worries were gone. It was as if the sun had risen within our room. Gabrielle, would you like to go on a trip? A sort of wedding trip?
I'd love to travel with you, Zena. But can we leave just like that?
Gabrielle inquired. Good point. But there ought to be some gain in being conqueror. I grinned and kissed the top of her nose. Actually, it won't be very difficult. The circle of advisors do much of the day-to-day work anyway. Besides, there are so many places I wanted to go back to again. I think it would mean so much more to be able to share them with you.
Zena, if we travel, do you think...
Gabrielle trailed off and refused to meet my eyes. What, love? Is there somewhere you'd like to go?
Home.
Gabrielle whispered softly. Put it here? I asked. Gabrielle nodded her head in silence. Of course, little one. Forgive me for not thinking of that ages ago. She brightened considerably at that. My own happiness was so tied in with hers that I felt lighter just seeing her come to life again.
I know that my mother and father, well, that there's every chance they may be dead now. But if I could only know.
I have an idea. Since Solon will be leaving with you, Pan, and the Amazon and the Centaurs will all be heading north, why don't we join them? A caravan of sorts. Solon wants to go back to his home and take care of some loose ends there. This will give you time to get to know the Amazons a little better, and we can have the ships meet us at the harbors of Potidia or Sion. Solon and you, Pan, can begin their journey from there. It will even give us time for the Queen of the Amazons to visit Amazonia.
Oh, Zena, that sounds wonderful!
Gabrielle kissed me again, and then began talking in an animated fashion. She started making lists of all what need to be done. Things to bring, clothes for travel. I listened attentively to every word, sincerely and utterly fascinated by the way my wife's mind worked. Once again I wondered at my good fortune. How could my life have been so miserable and dead just moons ago? How is it that I had chosen at birth by the gods to receive such joy by Gabrielle's mere presence in my life? What one thing did I do, what one act atoned for my many crimes enough to know such happiness now? So many questions and too few answers. I knew that our lives would not always be as though sailing on a sea of glass, but even when the difficult times come, I know I will never again have to face them alone. That is what will matter the most. Gabrielle and I will travel the road back home, and then we will travel the road called life together, hand in hand, never breaking stride. I can't know what the journey will contain, but like the petals of a rose, they will unfold one by one. When they have finally opened fully to us, we will look back at the blossom, in all its beauty, and say that it was love. Love made all the difference. Epilogue. We will leave on our extended travels in 2 days' time, and still my wife has me writing in these infernal scrolls. What I find most odd, and almost entertaining, the fact that I now look forward to the writing. She has not made a bard of me, that much is certain, but Gabrielle has certainly given me a release of sorts. I scribe my thoughts and feelings at the end of the day, along with the events that occurred. It helps me to see it in writing. I am learning, and at my age that is not always an easy thing to do. I look at the page before me, and some days I am able to look at it quite objectively. Others, I am not so good-natured. I try to look at the occasions when I lost my temper or spoke sharply to an underling. I remember the incident, and try harder the next time to keep my feelings more in check. A knock on my study door stops me in mid-thought.
Enter!
Lord Conqueror. Acacia, a trusted soldier, salutes me. He is among the number of men and women I entrust with private matters. They are loyal to death and have, in the past, been spies or assassins. These past lines of work make them perfect for discreet operations. He hands me a scroll and I peruse it before speaking. I motion with one hand for him to sit, but he does not. I usually expect him to act no differently. The mother and father? I ask.
Still alive. A small farm, just as you said, in Podidia. No word on the girl, though. If she was taken as a slave at the time, she could be dead many seasons past. I still have a few connections. I have the word out, Lord Conqueror. If she's still alive, I'll track her down.
Excellent work. I'll reward you amply for this, Kasia.
And the other, my lord? Do you wish to know of the woman?
She must be quite elderly by now, I answered, unsure of what else to say. I feared the soldier answers, no matter what it would be.
Aye, Lord Conqueror, that she is.
She's alive, then? I asked, feeling my belly clench tightly.
Aye, old but spry. She still owns the inn there in Amphipolis. She married about 15 seasons ago. Has a family helping her. Her old man died a few seasons back, but she's got a son and a daughter. Some little ones that must belong to them.
How did she look? Well?
Aye, well enough, Lord Conqueror.
Acacia answered. Thank you, Acacia. You have done well. Have some of your men see that no harm befalls any of these people. We leave in 2 days' time. I opened a drawer at my desk and handed the man a bag of talents, then dismissed him. I leaned back in my chair and wondered what she looked like. The little child in me still ached for acceptance. But I knew that the time for that had passed. Cyrene had a new family, and hopefully they helped her to forget the heartache the first had left her with. Hopefully her second daughter gave her what I could not. I pushed my melancholy aside and rose. I put out the lamp and returned to the rooms Gabrielle and I shared. The news from my wife was good, though. I would tell Gabrielle somewhere along the way that her parents still lived. I would do everything in my power to find her sister. It was odd, but I wasn't as sad as I expected to be. Hearing Cyrene and her new family, perhaps now being a wife and mother, I understood the woman a little bit more. With age comes many things, understanding foremost among them. All I could hope was that the long road home, which Gabrielle and I were about to embark down, would be one of happiness. The end. Well, that concludes Tale 2, Petal of the Rose, Chapter 20, and the end of Tale 2. I hope everyone has enjoyed the series, that's series 1 and 2. We will be taking a short break and then continuing on with Tale 3. I don't know what story I will have for the next episode, whatever I can dig up. Probably a short story, maybe just something that'll be just one or two episodes long, and then get back into the Conqueror series. Haven't quite decided yet. So I'll let you know as we go along. Please check out the blogspot for the links for the update on the Lucy Lawless information and on the book review. And any recommendations on a song or movie, go ahead and email me. Or if you have a book review, go ahead and email me. If you have any questions or just want to say hi or just want to shoot the shit or just ask what's going on in life, email me. My email is zena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next time, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye. Now I do not want to forget. No, see, let's take a picture now, 'cause I do not want to forget the way you look at me.